This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
8:36, Friday, the 2nd of December, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Chong Jensen, Philip Xie, and I'm Wong Xiaoning. But before that, let's talk about foreign policy of the new government. Because since Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim has been appointed Malaysia's 10th Prime Minister, a lot of attention has been drawn to the congratulatory gestures he has received from leaders around the world. They included personal phone calls from Turkey President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, Indonesia's Jokowi Widodo, and of course Singapore's Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong.
Anwar even had a visit from the Sultan of Brunei, Sultan Hassanal Bolkiah. He also received congratulatory messages online from leaders such as the 14th Dalai Lama and various foreign embassies in Malaysia.
While these gestures are an encouraging sign towards the international recognition of Anwar's leadership, how exactly does it impact the dynamics of Malaysia's international relations and enhance bilateral negotiations? While Anwar has yet to detail Malaysia's foreign policy direction, the newly minted Prime Minister is likely to play a diplomatic balancing act between East and West, given the friendly relationships he has with both sides.
So for some thoughts on this, we have on the line with us Izzah Ibrahim, analyst at the Foreign Policy and Security Studies Program at ISIS Malaysia. Good morning, Izzah. Thanks for speaking to with us. Now, during Anwar's maiden press conference, he did speak on the importance of China as an important neighbour with whom Malaysia had to strengthen relations. How do you think Anwar is going to achieve this?
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Considering the history and depth of Malaysia-Chinese relations, I feel that for strengthening them, I think more of it would be looking, it's more of a further formalization of something that we've had and benefited for quite some time. One of the most obvious ones has been our economic ties. And that can be said for many other countries that share this sort of trade and economic relations with China. But I feel like aside from that, there are areas that they can expand further. There has been quite a long and enduring cultural cooperation between the two countries, but that hasn't been that formalized either. And this is more of like a tacit and informal thing as well, considering that a lot of this is coming from the Chinese population in Malaysia.
Please continue.
Yeah, go on. I was just adding the other thing as well. Is to potentially expand is security concerns. I feel like that's another way that they could deepen and make these build a more comprehensive relations between China.
What about more complicated issues like the territorial disputes in the South China Sea or human rights issues like the Beijing's mistreatment of Muslims, Uyghurs?
Actually, prior to this, back when he was still with the first iteration of the Pakatan Harapan government, he has mentioned actually about his interest to have direct communications to China about the mistreatment of the Uyghur population and also the need for Southeast Asian nations to preserve their sovereignty against the South China Sea. However, that was then, and we're not sure, given today's geopolitical situations and other internal and external pressures, to whether he would feel the same way or would pursue it similarly as he has expressed prior. But for complicated issues like this, I feel like there, if there is any progress, baby steps would need to be taken. I think even for, so let's say with the South China Sea issue, because I feel that matter can be, I think they can gain more traction in the short term compared to the short to medium term, as opposed to the Muslim Uyghur situation, is building more open and transparent dialogue concerning the South China Sea.
Do you think with his close relationship with the United States, Anwar can play that balancing act between the US and China and perhaps even be that diplomat to ease tensions?
Yeah, I feel that comes from that assumption, right? Because he's always been seen as one to be more open or to more, amicable with the West. And the thing is that it is quite comforting as well that given his past interactions and with his recent speech concerning the importance of these relations, it's quite comforting to know that he knows the severity of the situation if it's not tread lightly. It will be quite challenging for him because I feel like he'll be managing quite a lot of pressures from many sources. Of course, the first would be the foreign relations because whatever interactions or meetings he may have with either, you know, either the US or China can bring wanted and unwanted reactions to them, with, whether they like it or not. This is partly because tensions between the two, the strategic competition and whatnot will be quite high between the US and China. And they would also need to balance not just those bilateral interactions, but how would they interact with and alongside other nations on both regional and international platforms. And we shouldn't also discount the domestic factors with this, because sometimes there are popular sentiments that are sometimes negative regarding the West. And this would be something that he would also need to navigate, especially because he's also working quite hard to make sure that the, you know, to also compel the population who did not vote for him during the elections, that he is also listening to them as well.
Isa, what about our role in ASEAN? How important will it be for Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim? And, you know, especially in regards to the Myanmar issue that doesn't seem to be closer to any resolution.
Actually, given Anwar's platform, especially because he's built quite a reputation for pushing a lot of political and civil rights, this could be actually quite an interesting space to look out for with ASEAN. However, unfortunately, I think the issue with ASEAN is not aside from in this matter, sorry, it's the general question for Malaysia's role. It's the question, do we have the political will to play a more comprehensive and significant role, and can we use that sort of new reinvigorated interest to push ASEAN further, you know, aside from keeping them at that somewhat, you know, it's been criticized widely for being stagnant. So there could be a chance that we could be pushing for more a formal position against Myanmar, because if we don't, it could set a pretty negative precedence that if we can't tackle Myanmar and the situation that's developing there any better, I don't think we'll be able to do that for any other future crises in the region.
And Isa, once the government is on more solid ground with a cabinet in place, what are the more pressing foreign policy issues that we have to address?
I think the one thing that I realized about Malaysia is that the core principles of our foreign policy hasn't actually changed much, if I have to be absolutely frank. You know, it's been mostly whatever it is to establish good, healthy relations to ensure our prosperity, because as we are a trading nation, we can't really be stepping toes on countries that can reduce these opportunities for us. And in maintaining these friendly relations, we also want to be neutral. And by doing so, it has maintained the same, but it just differs based on the interest and the style, if you may say, of the leader. But for currently, I think the most pressing foreign policy issues would still revolve around further recovery, not recovery per se, but further recovery out of the post-pandemic situation. So a lot of these situations would be looking into stuff like resources, so energy security, food security would be definitely something I think that would be pursued. And also other areas would be boosting our international and multilateral participation, especially in the post-pandemic situation.
Should he scrap special envoys? Are they a disruption to the diplomatic service?
That would be quite interesting. Yeah, they had, like, the past, the envoys have been given quite a negative reaction. Not necessarily negative, but they were scrutinized quite a bit. At the moment, I think probably it could be, we could probably, what's that word, simplify or streamline first, because I think that gives more credence to our institution as opposed to ad hoc arrangements.
Okay, and as we wait for Anwar's cabinet lineup, let us know, who is your top pick as foreign minister? What sort of qualities do you think are needed for this person?
No, that's going to be a hard one. It's okay, my answer will be a little bit of a cop-out, because I feel like instead of asking who, I think we should be asking ourselves, what do we want this individual to bring to the table, and can they do it? I think these should be the metrics we should be looking at, because as I kind of briefly mentioned earlier, Malaysia's foreign policy has been very personality based. It's, you know, particular interests or particular styles of leadership can affect how our foreign policy translates to other nations. And I feel like this is probably the excellent time to be building up principles and structure so that we can kind of, so we have the foundations, but we don't have to be so wholly dependent on this, you know, special individual to change everything. And the second part is that once we have that metric, we should be using that to be assessing as to whether these people did perform their duties as expected. Because this is quite difficult as well, because international relations, especially in Malaysia, is not something widely known or widely understood. So I feel like bringing this up first would probably be best.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Izzah Ibrahim, analyst at Foreign Policy and Security Studies Program at ISIS Malaysia. Up next, what are the legal reforms needed in this country? Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.